Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to WCCO News Talk 830. Dave Harrigan and I were talking before the break about a number of things. We're going to continue that discussion, but we want to invite you into the discussion as well. And you can do that most efficiently by using the WCCO talk and text line. It's 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. And I've got this screen up in front of me, so we'd be happy to take your questions or comments. And if you could make them civil, we'd appreciate that, so we don't have to, you know, plow through a bunch of profanity or whatever, Dave. So try to be decent.
Try.
So, but one of the texters before the break, Dave, was commenting on the phenomena in politics, whether it's national or statewide in Minnesota, where one party or the other has advantage in terms of a map. You look at the state of Minnesota as an example. A lot of the election results, there's a sea of red, kind of in greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota, and big blotches, or should say small blotches of blue in the Twin Cities and some of the regional centers. And then they can't get their brains around, well, how do we lose the election when I see so much red on the map and only, you know, called 6 to 8 counties are blue?
Land and doesn't vote.
And so while that is a little unsettling, it does go to this point. You can't win elections by only doing well in places where not many people live. You have to do also well, get support from locations and areas where lots of people live, because it's a math exercise. So the thing about the Twin Cities, the big parts of it are, in fact, blue. St. Paul, Minneapolis, the first-ring suburbs, the second-ring suburbs, even some of the third-ring suburbs have kind of gone DFL. And then the rest of the state, much of the rest of the state is red, except when you look at the so-called regional centers where lots of population is, namely places like Rochester,
Duluth,
Mankato, Duluth. Morehead used to be Republican, more recently Democrat, St. Cloud. And so those blue dots, even though they're small in an election map, you know, matter a lot. And so it's a math exercise. And I know it's different when you carve up the state with legislative districts or congressional districts, sometimes gerrymandered to favor one party or the other. But the reality is, my party especially can't just win in areas where population is sparse. You've got to be able to also win where population is more dense. Otherwise, you don't get enough votes in a place like Minnesota to carry the day in a statewide election.
Sure. And you being the last Republican here to win a statewide election, were there differences in what your campaign did to try to get votes from the population centers, the bigger, you know, obviously the Twin Cities, what we mentioned, Rochester, Duluth, et cetera, versus what you see now? Or was it simply just a matter of candidate, of people could see you as a Republican, but more on the moderate side to, you know, the last Republicans that have run for a lot of the statewide offices, and even the moderates in the metro areas said no?
Well, I think a lot has changed. And of course, it always does. Political movements evolve and change over time. Parties change over time. If you look about, you know, John Kennedy was a pro-life, pro-military interventionist, tax cutter, and other things, that he would not get nominated by today's Democratic Party. And conversely, Ronald Reagan, sort of a icon of the Republican Party not too long ago, you know, was pro-choice when he was governor of California. He raised taxes as president. He signed a huge immigration amnesty bill when he was president. And so he probably would not get the nomination of today's Republican Party. And again, it all evolves and changes. So you can't say what happened in the past is what should be now or even in the future. But as, to your point, I think the biggest change in the political shift in Minnesota has been the Republicans losing support in second and third ring suburbs. So where I live in Eagan, you know, there wasn't that long ago that Eagan was Republican, Apple Valley was Republican as an example. And if my party, you know, can't win St. Paul and can't win Minneapolis in the near term, and you can't win the first ring suburbs, at the very least, you've got to be able to claw back support in places like the second and third ring suburbs. You can't wait until you get to the exurbs, you know, like Farmington or Rogers before you start getting Republican support. So, and what does that mean? It's complicated, but one thing it means is suburban voters, those swing voters in the suburbs, not the partisans, but the last 5% that could sort of go either way, they're concerned about certain bread and butter things that, you know, sway elections. And you got to understand who they are. They tend to be women, you know, disproportionately this group, the swing voters in the in those suburbs.
Are you saying women can't decide anything?
That's no. I'm just saying.
I'm hearing, Tim.
No, that's
what I'm hearing.
Oh, my gosh, David. Please. No.
Really not kind.
No, but I'll be real. It's blunt. It is certainly economic issues, but it's partly the abortion issue. Mm-hmm. It's partly a crime and safety issue and being able to resonate with a Republican candidate who, you know, fits that profile of that voter, or at least has the views of that voter, would help, I think, my party.
Now, it's interesting because so you talked about the second and third ring suburbs. Is the change, those getting a little more blue, is that simply because you think Republicans have lost voters or Democrats have gained voters, changed minds, I guess? Or is it just a cause of our metro areas are growing? You got blue in the center, and the blue has been just kind of pushing out, people moving out of the city centers.
Some of both, I think.
And then kind of taking over, okay, well, we already took over the first ring suburbs. Those are getting a little busy, so let's move a little further out. And it's just kind of the blue expanding out wider.
I think that's both are true. I think what I said was true. We lost some support because of positions that we've taken or candidates that we've run, and sort of the phenomena of the urban voter profile is moving out into the first ring and second ring suburbs. Another example is my hometown of South St. Paul. I mean, back when I was there, it was certainly Democrat, but it was sort of what you'd consider the old labor Democrats. They were very strong pro-union voters, but they weren't necessarily economic or social liberals beyond that. And so they elected people that would be sort of a blue dog Democrat type of candidates from a place like South St. Paul. South St. Paul's changing. It's now looking more urban, or looking more blue in terms of a progressive outlook in terms of the voters. So that has not just Republicans losing support. It's also a population shift that reflects more of a progressive voter profile.
Did you leave South St. Paul because you didn't want to be associated with Adam Carter, or was it just Mayor Jimmy Francis you can't take?
Well, you know, I love both of those guys, and you know, I don't want to.
You don't have to say that.
I don't want to.
This is a safe place.
Yeah, I don't want to be immodest, Dave. It's not my style. But in just a few hours, a high school sports team that I was on is going to be inducted into the South St. Paul Sports Hall of Fame.
Really?
Yeah, we don't need to spend too much time on it. Really, really. But
congratulations! which squad was this?
This was the South St. Paul 1978-79. High school soccer team coached by none other than the legendary Doug Woog.
He coached soccer?
Yes, he coached soccer and did not know a lot about soccer, but he applied hockey principles to soccer. And
heck of a motivator, I'm sure.
The rest of the story is there was a year, the golden year, which I think is why we're getting inducted later today. We went 22-0, undefeated the entire year. Mm-hmm. Went to the state championship out in Richfield, the tournament was, and we lost 1-0 in a weathery, wet, kind of half snowy game, and we lost to a middling team named Cooper. And later in politics, I met that person. He came up to me and he said, you know who I am? I said, no. He said, I'm that goalie from Cooper. And he stood on his head. I mean, he was an outstanding goalie that day. And I said, oh man, that's harsh. And he said, I'll tell you something else harsh. He said, I don't support you in politics either.
Oh, I beat you then. I'll beat you again. Were you a vital member of the team?
I
grew up playing soccer. Let me tell you, no talent. I was a goalie and defender because I could get in the. I learned how to get in the way of the ball, getting in the goal.
Yeah, my principal skill. I would say there were a few stars on the team for sure, and I wasn't one of those. But I think I was a meaningful contributor in part because I was taller than everyone else, and one of my calling cards was I could get in front of the net and head the ball.
Explain some of your political viewpoints, Governor.
Yes, I probably have been concussed. CTE is setting in my brain. Let's talk about a couple of texters here if we have a minute.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep an eye on the clock here as well. But, you know, the texters are writing in and talking about, as a lifelong Democrat, he's making a nice comment about our discussion and us. That's very nice. There's also somebody commenting about population centers being taken over by immigrants that vote Democrat. and it's not a level playing field, and that's part of an overall Democratic strategy. You know, that is, there's no question that part of the demographic change. I mean, there's futurists always say, if you want to see the future, look at demographics. You can also look at certain areas of the country where they sort of are ahead of the Midwest by 10 or 20 years demographically. There is no question, regardless of what you think about immigration, that the number of immigrants that have come to this country in the last, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 years has changed, you know, the demographics of the country. And that includes the voting patterns as well, those immigrants. So, you know, that's what leads into a whole other discussion about immigration. But I think it would be naive to say it hasn't affected voting patterns, at least at the margins.
No, I think it's fairly obvious. Absolutely it has.
And then this person says, did farmland vote for Trump? Yeah, I mean, most of the farmers, I want to say all of them, but, you know, there's a big divide in farm country or in greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota. There's a group of farmers who I think are very pro-Trump, and there's a group of farmers who are not, but I think the majority of them tend to be supporting President Trump and are Republicans. And the texter writes, well, what about the tariffs hurting those farmers? And I think they are hurting the farmers, and they're getting kind of upset about that. I mean, they are upset about that. And when Trump put tariffs on agricultural products last time in his first term, he sent out cash to farmers to sell, you know, to subsidize or soften the blow of those tariffs. They haven't done that yet this time. They've done a few other little things. But I think, yes, the bulk of the farmers, I would say, support Trump, many of them. But even those are a little miffed right now about what's going on with the tariffs.
Yeah, they have to be. They absolutely have to be. You know, I think a lot of the promises that were made regarding the tariffs and farmers being all right so far, yeah, things can change, but it hasn't been great. Hasn't been great. You know, soybeans specifically, I know China has, you know, seemingly figured out a way to get around U.S. soybeans.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal for a lot of Minnesota farmers.
Well, and a lot of the business is going to Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they are huge producers of many of the same commodities as the U.S. And when China can't get them from us at a reasonable price,
they'll get them elsewhere.
They'll get them elsewhere. There's a caller or texter who says, it's about our voting rolls in Minnesota. The federal government has sued our Secretary of State about trying to get access to voting rolls because there's a suspicion of, you know, either negligent or mischievous caretaking of the voting rolls in Minnesota. Hasn't been proven yet, but the Secretary of State of Minnesota is fighting that effort. And this texter is saying we've got fraud in our voting rolls in Minnesota. Well, we'll have to wait to see if the federal government can get their hands on that data and see if that's true. But I mean, it's a provocative point.
Yeah. Well, if there is fraud, certainly they'll uncover it. We've heard plenty from Donald Trump and his people about fraud in voting, and I haven't seen a lot that's actually shown up to prove their points, but who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take a short break, Dave. We'll come back. After the break, we're going to be talking to Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council, about the business climate and job climate in Minnesota on News Talk 830-WCCO.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, and we are taking your texts and responding to them. And then in a few moments, we're going to have Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council, talk about the business and job climate in Minnesota. By the way, really important topic, because for most people, unless you're lucky enough to have an inheritance, your ticket to being able to connect to the economy and support a family or yourself is to get a job. And so growing jobs, good paying jobs in our state is of paramount importance. And he's got a lot of insight about how we can do that better and continue to do it in the great state of Minnesota. Our texters are writing in reminding me that not all farmers are for Trump. I think I did say that. I said many are, but not all. There's another texter who said that he's got a relative who's a soybean farmer and there's no problem selling soybeans at good market rates. I don't know if that's what all farmers would share that view, but sharing it because somebody texted it in. Somebody frustrated that the judges won't allow the voter fraud cases to be fully investigated because they keep throwing out the cases on procedural grounds. We'll see what happens to the one in Minnesota. We have a person saying that if you want to a good idea, if AI is wiping out the need for office space and is eliminating so many jobs, maybe we don't need population growth, Dave. Like everybody always assumes we need to grow. We need more people. That's how growth is in part generated, is demographic growth. This person is saying, you know, maybe that's not true anymore relative to AI because of its impact on the job market. Another person says if you want to talk about population growth, he is proposing that before people have sex, you have to go before a 3-judge panel to get permission. I don't think that's going to be very popular.
Like right before?
Well, maybe you could do it by Zoom. I don't know.
You have to make an appointment?
What the heck is this person talking about? Maybe I'm misreading it, Dave. Do you see it on your screen there?
I don't have it pulled up.
Maybe I'm imagining things.
I mean, this is like right before the foreplay?
It's not clear. He says, have men if... Yeah, it says Republicans aren't losing support in the state. What's happening is Republicans are leaving the state. And then I guess it's a different caller saying, have men present themselves to a decision by a 3-judge panel as to whether they can have a sexual encounter or not. Abortions would go down and population, I guess he's saying, would be controlled. He didn't say that part. But now that's out there.
I don't see that happening for a multitude of reasons. I see that fraught with a bit of peril.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. One person says we should have a Vikings game in Norway instead of Ireland or London. I don't know. Norway's a beautiful country.
Any of those Scandinavian countries would welcome the Vikings, right? Norway, Finland, Iceland.
I suppose that
Denmark.
Would have to be a home game, though. If you're the Vikings and you're in Norway, what the opposing team would view that as friendly territory for the Vikings.
They'd be terrified. They'd be terrified to show up. You don't go visit the Vikings. You don't even want the Vikings to come and plunder your town, let alone go show up to their house.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right. And then somebody's like saying, redact sensitive information, but make the voter rolls public. You know, there's obviously some sensitivity. We don't want people to have to disclose how they voted or suggest how they voted. But I think that's an interesting – Minnesota has a tradition of clean elections, clean voter rolls, but – there's allegations that have been made, at least in some isolated instances, where I think they're worth looking into. And I think that's what this federal lawsuit's going to be about in part. All right, Dave, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jim Schultz, the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. We'll be back after this break.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio. This is Tim Pawlenty filling in for Chad Hartman on this Minnesota Friday afternoon. I hope you're able to get out a little early today and enjoy what's left of this very wonderful day. We're going to have a really good, although a little hot weekend coming up as well. So we're joined now by Jim Schultz. He's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. You probably haven't heard of this group, but it's a group that is dedicated to sort of studying and advancing a positive business and job environment in Minnesota. Jim has been at the helm there for a few years and is growing it immensely. But as I said before the break, as you think about the quality of life in our state, there's a lot of components to it. But for most people, the ability to have access to a good paying job, hopefully with a good company, or to start a company and be an entrepreneur, is a main pathway for how people can have economic stability and hopefully success and support their family and have a good life. And so this is an important topic. It's just one factor of many, but it's a really important topic. And Jim Schultz, we're glad that you're joining us today on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio.
Well, thank you, Governor. It's so great to be on with you again.
Terrific. Well, I know Minnesota has had a lot of success in a lot of measurements, but one area that is quite controversial for our state is sort of the current state of our business climate. And I know it's different in different parts of the state, but can you just give us sort of, to start, a high level summary or overview of where the business climate in Minnesota sits and job climate today?
Yes, absolutely. So So a lot of Minnesotans know that historically Minnesota's economy has performed really well compared to the rest of the country. We've been kind of a good job growth state, a good GDP growth state. I think it's fair to say that over the past several years, Minnesota's fallen behind relative to other states. There's a number of different metrics you can look at there. You know, when you look at job growth, for example, since 2018, Minnesota's jobs have grown by about 2.8% compared to 7% nationally. So job growth falling behind. You might say, well, Jim, job growth isn't the only thing. What about GDP? Again, historically our GDP has been, you know, at least consistent with nationwide growth, or maybe a little bit above. Over the past several years, our GDP has been slower. Our GDP growth has been slower than other than the national average. For the first time in our state's history, our GDP per capita, kind of the amount that each individual person is contributing, has now become below average. So if you look at it, basically almost every economic data point, with one asterisk I'll get to in a moment, Minnesota's falling behind, I think you guys say. One positive is that we've got a very low unemployment rate. And I think probably that's a positive, but I think it's driven substantially by the fact that we've got, you know, baby boomers retiring and a fair amount of net out migration out of the state, with people leaving the state. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but when you talk about the low unemployment rate, it's driven by some not so great factors.
And I should mention, Jim, you know, and by the way, Jim Schultz joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, as all of our News Talk 830 WCCO guests do. You're like a chamber of commerce, but you're not the big companies that are with the Minnesota Business Partnership Group. You're not the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, but you sort of represent a subgroup of companies and employers who are mostly privately held. They're not publicly traded, and they're not the smallest, but they're certainly not the biggest companies in Minnesota. Overall, they tend to be sort of mid-sized companies or enterprises. Is that right?
That's right. I'd say our kind of typical company is maybe 50 to 300 employees, meaningfully sized. A lot of our job creation in the state is is headquartered in businesses of that size, and we see a lot of the effects of Minnesota tax policy, Minnesota regulatory policy, and otherwise.
And so when you talk to these folks every day, these are folks who have started businesses, grown businesses, are trying to provide jobs. And I used to say, and still say, if you want to find out how to improve the business climate, you should ask the people who start and grow businesses, because they're the ones who understand the barriers. So when you talk to your members and interact with them, and they identify for you their frustrations about starting or growing a business in Minnesota, what are the things you most commonly hear as a complaint or concern?
Yeah, Tim, that's a really good question. I think you hear a few things. Number one, you hear the tax burden in the state. We've got the second highest corporate tax burden, and then we've got the kind of sixth highest aggregate tax burden in the country. So a lot of business owners, they look around and they say, I could go to Iowa, have a dramatically lower tax rate. I could go to Texas. I could go to South Dakota. And when they're making decisions in terms of where to invest, whether they're moving their business or building another facility or you name it, it becomes, can become tax advantageous to go elsewhere. So a lot of our businesses are concerned about the tax burdens, some of which have increased in recent years. You also hear, and you increasingly hear it, just the aggregate regulatory burden. A lot of these guys and women who are running their businesses, they don't want to do anything wrong. They don't want to harm the environment or anything, but they find it increasingly difficult to get through kind of the regulatory morass that is the Minnesota regulatory climate. You see it in really big projects when it comes to these big projects like data centers and things like that, where the permitting process takes prohibitively long to actually accomplish anything. And you see it in smaller areas where, just getting the permit to do kind of the day-to-day work of their business, to manage labor challenges, things along those lines, is just really, really challenging. And some of them operate in other states where it is just, kind of the red carpet is rolled out to help them achieve their business goals. And so it becomes harder. I was just down with one of our member businesses down in Jackson, Minnesota, and they could move 10 miles south to Iowa and reduce their corporate taxes by two-thirds, and it becomes hard to make the case for staying in Minnesota when there is such a delta between the two experiences.
We're talking to Jim Schultz, who's the leader of the Minnesota Private Business Council, about Minnesota's job and business climate. Jim, a couple other quick things, and we'll take a break and have you come back after the break, too. But there's other studies, and I think our friends on the Democratic side of this discussion would say, yes, we understand what Jim is saying. But when you look at things like CNBC studies and certain other studies where they look not just at tax issues, but a broader measurement of what those organizations call the business climate, sometimes Minnesota looks better on those. And how do you respond to that? Sometimes we're higher, sometimes we're lower, depending on what survey you look at.
Well, it's important to note that, you know, it's not just, you know, just an incredibly terrible environment here. We do have some things going for us. We've got a really highly skilled workforce, a really productive workforce. We've got other positive things, you know, a good upper education system, things along those lines. I think, and some of those qualitative factors are factored in. That CNBC study that a lot of people cite also factors in a lot of just like social policy and things along those lines that tend to make, you know, just nationwide Democrat-run states look better. I think most business owners would say, you know, it's vastly more important. You know, the tax burdens, the regulatory burdens are vastly more important than, for example, the nature of, you know, given, you know, social policies in the state. And so I think a lot of people, including myself, would say that those other studies simply aren't representative of the actual business climate of individual states.
Sure. And then I think, Jim, one other topic before break is the workforce. You mentioned it. There's a volume issue, which is, do you have enough just in terms of supply? But then there's also a readiness issue, which is, does our educational system, both at the K-12 level and higher educational level, provide the skills and training to these young men and women who are entering the workforce to give them an opportunity, but also meet the demands of the companies in our state? And our educational system is got some problems. I mean, we have most of our children not being proficient in reading, math, and science at grade level. And so do your members express concern about the quality of the workforce in addition to the availability of it by volume?
I think over the past, it's a really good point, Tim. I think over the past 5 years, really since COVID in particular, people have become really concerned about our education system. Now, it's important to note we've got many just, you know, incredible teachers all around the state, but I think people are concerned about just the overall educational system, the incentives created, things along those lines, and the fact that, as you point out, you know, half of all kids at various grade levels can't read and do math at grade level. And so when you talk about workforce readiness, things along those lines, we have seen a significant decline, both from where Minnesota used to perform and also compared to other states, such that we're simply not educating our kids. We're not delivering our kids with the resources to succeed in the economic climate of today, and business owners do bring that up. It is really a challenge to bring people on who can't read and do math at grade level.
Okay, we're going to take a short break on WCCO News Talk Radio 830. We'll be right back with Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio. We love hearing from our texters, especially the ones that make thoughtful comments and don't swear at me, so I appreciate that. And we're talking to Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council, who really focuses on trying to get pro-business, pro-jobs policy in Minnesota. Jim, one of the texters, I think, is saying, basically taxes aren't the only thing. You got to have a state that is humane. You got to be able to support people, and that takes revenues. And I think, you know, you would say, and you can just comment on it, it's a balance, right? You can't be, we're not going to be a state where we gut social services and those kinds of support systems, but we also can't be so expensive that you drive business growth and job growth out of the state. Is that how you view it?
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think it's really important. Absolutely, we have to ensure we have got a social safety net, that people who need it are taken care of. But I think what a lot of people would argue, what I would argue, is that we've lost that balance here, particularly in recent years. You know, in the 2023 legislative session, for example, you know, we increase the state budget by 38% in a given legislative session, such that, and spending on a variety of priorities, some of which were the social welfare stuff and so forth. And Minnesota's, you know, for a long time had a really generous social safety net. And the idea that we need to dramatically expand it now, as we did in 23 and thereafter, and have for some years, I think a lot of us would argue that we've lost that balance, such that the tax burden on individual businesses, on families, is just not bearable anymore. I mean, there's other states, some of our neighbors, others that maintain a robust social safety net, but don't have the tax burden that we have, and don't go do some of the things that we do. And I think it's really important to note that nobody's talking about making Minnesota into Texas or to Alabama or something, but I do think we do need to be more attentive to the incredible growth of our state budget that is really increasing the tax burden on Minnesotans.
I think that's a good summary, because if you look at Minnesota and you just ask, you know, where are we aberrational, you know, ahead or behind national measurements, you'd be hard pressed to say Minnesota on the social service that doesn't spend enough money per capita. We're one of the highest spending states in the country. But you can mathematically show that we also, though, are on the very top of the range on taxes as well. And so if you look at where is the imbalance in this effort of trying to balance it, you know, you kind of look to taxes, I think, fairly so. And those are great points. So jumping back to education for a minute, one of the people texted in saying, do the concerns about education factor in the impact of immigration on our educational system? And the texter is saying or implying that the test scores are dragged down by people who are new arrivals. They may not yet be fully up to speed on speaking English, may not be able to learn as quickly or as well as folks who, you know, have been here since birth. How do you respond to a concern like that, that we're not, you know, adjusting educational scores based on new arrivals to our country who are not up to speed educationally?
Yeah, it's a very good point. We do have we're a very welcoming state to first generation immigrants, and we do have a meaningful immigrant presence in the state here. I'd say a couple things. Even if you look at communities with relatively low new immigrant levels, you know, we still have very low proficiency in many school districts, and some of which are 20%, 30%, some of which are 40%, 50%. But even in communities, you get outside of the Twin Cities into some areas that do not have high levels of new immigrants, we still see that underperformance. You could also look at other states that have similar levels of new immigrants, and we're underperforming relative to them as well. And so I think it's a worthwhile point, but I don't think it does explain the real significant decline in our performance. And if you look at it, you know, from I think 2013, I think roughly 65% of all students were proficient in math and reading. And at that time, we of course had an immense new immigrant presence then as well. And so we're at comparable levels now and dramatic educational decline.
Yeah, and it's time for a Lindus construction time check. It's time to protect your home with dog-free LeafGuard brand gutters from Lindus Construction. The time is 2:52.
Dog-free and clog-free.
Oh, it says clog-free.
But there's also no dogs in them.
I also have my reading glasses on, and it doesn't say dog. It says clog, and I misread it. Dave, I can't believe I did that.
I can.
By the way, I do have leaf filter gutter guards on my house in Egan and at our cabin.
Are there dogs?
They're fantastic. And there's no dogs in the gutters.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. All right. Back to Jim Schultz. Jim, we're going to let you go in a minute here. But as you think about these businesses being concerned about the Minnesota climate and moving elsewhere, one of the texters asks, you know, obviously they go to lower cost states sometimes, but are there instances where they go somewhere that's not necessarily low cost? It's not just Alabama or Texas or something. You know, are we losing jobs and business opportunities, investment to states that you'd consider still high quality of life states? I guess that's the question.
You know, you see that occasionally, but I have to say it's pretty unusual, you know, where you see a business, you know, kind of move from from Minnesota to a California or a Washington state, or kind of a state that has a comparable level of kind of regulatory burden, but maybe a robust, robustly sized government and so forth. So you see it occasionally, but the vast majority of the shifts we've seen, both from Minnesota and just nationally, is from states like with a really heavy tax and regulatory burden, down to states like Tennessee or South Carolina or Texas or Iowa or South Dakota that are doing some things that to reduce their tax burdens, to make it doable to add jobs, to build a business and otherwise. And so, broadly, that's the shift we're seeing.
Gotcha. Well, Jim, we appreciate you bringing your insights and your expertise to the WCCO listeners. And we hope that you have a great rest of your day and a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you, Tim. Great to be on with you.
All right. That's Jim Schultz. He's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. We're joined now also by somebody very special, the one and only Jason DeRussia, who...
Clog-free. I'm clog-free.
You are.
Relatively.
Speaking of which, are you regular? I mean, do you consider yourself at this advanced age regular?
Yeah. No, fair question. I definitely, once you hit 50,
yeah,
the wake-ups in the middle of the night,
yep,
they start creeping up, and I get a little nervous about it, is this a new way of life?
This is personal, but I know you are a foodie. You go out, eat at great restaurants.
You asked if I was regular.
You ate great food.
Yeah.
And you probably go to bed after having eaten late and heavy a lot.
Happens,
and so do you correlate your heavy meal, late eating meals with your sleep quality?
I think the drinking certainly has an impact on sleep quality. I've found I was reading some research today that said your quality of sleep and the is more correlated to the time you go to sleep.
Yes,
which I thought was very interesting. I have noticed now that the kids are gone, we go to bed usually between 10 and 10:30, a little earlier. Mm-hmm. Used to go to bed more 11. Well, of course, back in the morning news days, I was going to bed at 8 o'clock in the night. But yeah. I don't know.
I think I read that same article, but I clearly read it more carefully than you did.
Clearly.
And how I understood the article was this.
I'm a typical talk radio host.
That people...
Headlines only.
Headlines. Hot takes. Let's go.
People think, you eat a big breakfast, a medium lunch, and a light dinner.
Oh, right.
But this article said it depends on whether you're a morning person or a night person. And the essence of it was, if you are a morning person... Eat the big breakfast, eat the medium lunch, eat the light dinner. But if you're a night owl, if you get going, later in the afternoon, in the evening, then do it in the reverse. Eat the light breakfast, medium, and the big dinner, depending on when you get your energy going.
Last night, I probably ate around 8 o'clock at night, so a little late, a little later than normal. This weekend, I'm going to the soft opening of Chi-Chi's.
What?
The world reinvigoration of Chi-Chi's.
The one and only?
Yeah, it's back. St. Louis Park.
Chi-Chi's. I spent a lot of my youth at the Chi-Chi's in Bloomington and the adjoining nightclub called Maximilian's.
It's back.
Oh, my God.
It's back.
I got PTSD. What's going to be on your show?
You want to come? Let's go.
What's your show going to feature today?
It's just going to be nonstop, people talking about how crappy this state is. We're starting with optimism versus pessimism. That's where we're starting.
I love it. All right. That's Jason DeRussia. He's going to be on in just a few minutes. Thanks for joining us today on News Talk WCCO 830.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.